Station number 15590, Phil Plowright, Reel 4.
Mr. Plowright, Reel 4. Now, we were talking about this weapons training course at Bisley that you were on, and the various weapons. What about the various forms of hand grenades, or perhaps just the Mills bomb that you had then?
They came in as well. Yes, they came in as well. They had the 38 Mills hand grenade.
Now, how are you trained to throw that?
Initially we were trained in bays. We entered a bay and primed your grenade, and there was an observing period, throw, and then back down again, depending on the length of the fuse in the detonator. There were two kinds of detonators. One was a 5 second, another was a 7 second. So that you had to be careful about which ones were being used. You got to know which ones they were primed with.
Were they colour-coded?
No, they weren't. Not that I can remember. I think there were some means of knowing, but I can't remember what it was.
What was the different length times four? Why five and seven?
So that you'd got time to observe. You didn't just throw and then put your head down. You got to observe, look where you were throwing, and get some idea of your flight, and then get down at the time of explosion. That was a textbook way. I don't know whether or not it.
What throwing action did you use?
Overarm, as in bowling a ball. Straight arm and throw.
Now, you were a good thrower.
Yes, I could throw a grenade a fair way.
How far do you reckon?
I reckon I could throw it a good 50 yards. A good 50 yards.
Because that's up to twice what some people can throw it.
25 yards is about the 25 to 30. But I could go further if I needed to. Or I'd got the freedom of arm. I mean, sometimes you're throwing from cramped positions and this sort of thing. But given to lob it a long way, I could probably get 50 yards, or could at that time.
And did you like the 38 mils? Was it rated as a weapon?
Yes, it was used quite extensively.
Were there any other grenades?
Yes, we had the Bakelite grenade.
What were they?
That was a 39 grenade.
What was the difference?
It was a Bakelite cover, and instead of pulling the pin out and holding the handle, which when you threw it, it let go and allowed the percussion to take effect onto the detonator, this was you unscrewed a cover, a Bakelite plasticky sort of cover, like an egg cup thing, and there was a tape inside, and as you threw it, the tape unwound. And as it unwound, it allowed the impact to take place.
What did you think of the Bakelites?
They were very good at close quarters. Very good. They were light, easy to carry. And you could pick one up and whack it pretty well. And it exploded on impact. Didn't have to wait for it.
Any other grenades? Smoke grenades or phosphorus?
Well, smoke grenades, they were used mainly with the mortar, the 2-inch mortar. We didn't have smoke grenades as a speciality, but they came in with the mortar, the 2-inch mortar.
Well, let's move on to the 2-inch mortar. Mm. Which mortars were you taught?
2-inch as an infantry weapon. 3-inch was mainly carried by headquarters, and it was belonged to the mortar platoon. But an ordinary infantry section or platoon carried the 2-inch.
How would you load and fire the 2-inch? What was the drill with the 2-inch?
The 2-inch, just drop it into the barrel, and away it went. As I remember, there was a screw on the end of the tail fin, and you just dropped it in and pop it went.
The impact?
Yes, at the bottom, sent it off, yes.
So a very uncomplicated weapon.
Hmm.
How far could they fire about?
Depending on the trajectory, of course. If you fired it straight up in the air, it would only go up. On the other hand, it would go further on a trajectory type flight rather than one straight up into the air. I think the best range for the mortar was 100 yards. After that, it became a bit hit and miss because you didn't have a sight on it, you see.
Any other weapons that you were taught while you were at Bisley?
Boy's anti-tank rifle.
Now, what did people think of that?
Nothing. They told you about broke your shoulder every time you fired it. People did have shoulders dislocated with it.
Did people think it was a serious weapon? Because it was a sort of an enlarged rifle, wasn't it?
Yes. I think the object it was to teach us that it would be an effective weapon. Hindsight and development of other weapons proved that this was rubbish anyway. It would have been rubbish.
Have they mentioned that they've had trouble with them in France, the fall of France, Dunkirk? They've not been very successful there.
No. I think what happened was that a lot of those were left behind. Men just dumped them. We didn't carry them. They always remained with B echelon.
Anything else? Any other weapons?
We had the projectile infantry anti-tank.
Were you taught that in Italy?
Yes. Met it first there in a different form to what it became known as afterwards.
What was the form you were introduced to? Could you explain? Because it's not that well-known a weapon.
No. It was spring-loaded, and before you could put your projectile in onto it, you'd got to load it with a spring, and that was rather difficult. You'd lay on your back and put your 2 feet in the shoulder piece, which was like a T-piece, pulled on the barrel and pushed back the spring action at the same time. And then you could close it up again, but the spring was cocked. Then when you put the round on, you press the trigger, the spring was released, giving the impact to the explosive in the bomb, which took it towards the target. This, in turn, exploded again on impact. The spring, meanwhile, the recoil spring, had returned back to the loaded position. So that it was always ready for putting a bomb in. They weren't very accurate, but they did pack a punch.
How did you aim them? Was there a sight?
There was a rough sight, yes. Yes, again, it was a close quarter thing. You couldn't fire it from a long distance.
About what range is
there? Used to say when you can see the whites of the tank driver's eyes. But I think 40 yards probably its best range.
Did you actually get a chance to fire them then?
I did. I got one chance. That's another matter. Yes, I didn't actually fire it, but I was in the group that carried it out. That was an adventure in itself.
Can you tell us about it?
You want it at this stage?
Was it later on?
It would come in probably into the when we in Italy.
Right. We'll stick to Italy. So it was theoretical at Bisley.
Yes, it was. Yes, we fired. We did actually fire these things at a target. But, as I say, they were developed better afterwards. But these were prototype things. But I did know something, learn something about them.
And any other weapons?
We had the revolver, of course.
Which one? Did they actually train you in it at Bisley?
Yes.
Which revolver were you issued with?
Smith & Wesson, 45.
What was it like to fire?
I didn't get to the same sort of proficiency as Billy the Kid and all those. There's a lot more to pistol shooting than meets the eye.
And,
well, I think that, first of all, if you get a ball 10 yards away, you stand a good chance of getting away with it if somebody shoots at you.
So the effective range was
10 yards or less.
Less than a Thompson.
Yes,
Thompson.
To be effective. If you wanted to aim at the whatever part of an anatomy, you probably wouldn't hit it. It's a very heavy gun, and the practice at that time was to hold them a straight arm. You just picked the gun up and fired it straight arm. Nowadays they do all sorts of fancy things, obviously, which I never knew about. But, as I say, up to about 10 yards they were all right. After that it was anybody's game. That is my view.
What made them so inaccurate? Just the...
No, they were very heavy. It was quite a heavy gun, a heavy revolver. And it's not easy holding your arm out straight while you take aim. Even with anything in it, especially a gun in your hand, it wanders a bit. Starts to sag.
Did you do much shooting with them? Or practice shooting in England?
Not a lot. Not a lot, no. I never owned one in England. I acquired one abroad. But... I wasn't issued with one. If when you were doing pistol shooting, you drew them out of the armoury to go and have a go.
Now, was there anything else about the course of Bisley? Did you do exercises while you were there, or was it just learning the weapons there?
It was learning the weapons, how to instruct on them. And,
now, with instruction, did you just learn... Was it this method of just parroting the manual, or how did they teach you to teach people?
Basically with the manual. Has to be some kind of order, otherwise it would wander away. So you took the particular weapon based on the manual, based on trial and error. And the rest of it were things that were probably useful, but not entirely necessary. You can, there's all sorts of ways, but they always taught you the book way. There were other ways you could fire them and teach them afterwards, but the book way was the essential.
Now, early you went through a bit of, you know, the manual on sights and things. Is that how you do it with the men, or would you just do the manual and then sort of go through it with them? Or?
With the men, taking a group on a Bren gun, you'd have to... prepare your lesson or your period and then set them up with individual tuition and trial and error. For instance, you'd say, Private Bloggs, I want you to take out the firing pin in 2 seconds or 2 minutes or 2 hours, whatever, starting now. And the bloke has to do it in that time. And you correct faults as they occur after it's finished. The same with aiming it and that. You have these eye things where you can see where his sights are aligned by looking through, and he's aiming at the centre of the target, which is covering your eye. You can see actually see where he's pointing and make corrections and so on. There was always a competitive... or competition element in it to keep it interesting. Otherwise the whole thing just became a bore, and did often, I'm afraid. But
so you were taught how to instruct. Anything else?
Then I went on APTC course.
Now what's APTC? Course?
Army School of Physical Training. Army Physical Training
Where
School.
Was that, at?
That was held at York.
This is all part of your being a, you know, potential officer material.
And an instructor and whatever. Yes, yes.
And what happened there at York?
I enjoyed that very much. We did gym work, physical exercises that you could teach to the troops. We played games. We had went on river crossings, run and walk, miles in minutes, crossing rivers with nothing but using your equipment for making a raft. A group of you putting rifles and gas capes and things like that together to make a raft and putting your equipment in and then swimming across with it. We had boxing and wrestling, and above all, how to instruct on that. I remember when I was passing out on that, we were all sat in a ring, and the instructor was in the bloke who was taking the exam was in the middle of the ring, and he had the ability, or he had the authority to call anyone out and give them a subject which they'd got to talk on for so many minutes without any thought, any pre-thought to what they were going to say. And I always remember when he called me out, "You're out here for so long, and I want you to talk about wind." And I thought, being a peasant, of course, I thought about wind of the other sort. I started to go around it, you know. I said, "Well, wind is affected in many different ways by people." I said, "People are affected by vegetables and things like that." So I did blah blah along, you know. This bloke said, "Not that, you bloody idiot." It caused a great laugh in the thing. I got a good mark, actually. Yes, I got a good mark.
You were keen on sport. Did you ever think of going into the army physical training, you know, into the becoming a PT instructor within the army, or
no?
Was it not possible?
I think that in the early days when I went in, there were people in the as PT instructors, such as the one I've just told you about, Warnie Cresswell, who was a Sunderland and England classy fullback in the 20s. Earlier than that. I met people like Stan Cullis, who was the captain of Wolverhampton Wanderers. He was in as an APTC man. Tom Finney, he was.
So just being good at sport faded into confidence.
Right.
Next to these people.
Correct. The same as the entertainers went into the ENSA. So that getting in as a thing from the ground floor with nothing, but there weren't enough of them to take every man in every battalion. So battalion instructors were also trained, people that could probably take that sort of thing, and I was chosen on that grounding. So armed with all this, I went back to Bestwood, where headquarters was, and they appointed me as a cadre instructor, taking Wally Binch, Neville Wildgust, John Nevitt, Guy Powell, numerous others. A lot of them are still in the 70th. And we had a really good, I think they were on it for a month, and I took them in all these subjects that I'd been taking them in. And we had a wonderful time. And when that broke up, we all split up to...
Where was the cadre course held?
Bestwood Lodge.
It was actually in the lodges.
Yes, it was, yes. In the lodge and grounds, yes.
Now, before I go on to discuss that, because I'm quite interested in that course, but had you never actually been sent away on an officer's course yourself?
No. Oh, no.
You were just being trained up and trained up.
Yes.
As a sort of instructor.
Right. Kept on being trained and training other people.
Now, what about that cadre? What were your first impressions of Wally and all the rest of them?
Well, I was the same age as them, and I had to establish another sort of feeling with them, if you like, a different sort of rapport with them. We'd all been friends together when we were in various other places in Nottingham, although not so much with Wally, but with one or two of the others, certainly. But the people that had been chosen were not, they weren't rubbish. They knew that I'd got something that they had got to acquire. I knew it, and they'd got to sort of get it from me. And they gave me good attention and no trouble, and we were able to have a good course. There was no bull attached to it, or only the very minimum of bull, if you like. We were left alone, and an officer dropped in on occasions and sat through a session, but he was more ignorant of some of the things than some of the lads were that were doing it. Remember, there was one guy came. I'm not going to give you his name because he's probably still going. And he was a little man, and he couldn't even see straight. And I remember his gaiters. He had these enormous gaiters, and they came halfway up his leg. And his trousers were all anything but the way that we'd been taught to put them into gaiters. And I don't think he knew very much about what we were talking about. I'm quite sure he didn't know anything about the PT element of it, physical training side of it. Anyway, that's another thing. But they did come in on occasions to sit through the... And they were always there on assembly, when the course was assembling, and they detailed the course procedures. Today it's so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. And they also gave lectures on field craft and map reading, some of those sort of things.
Now, had you done any of that? Yes, tactical stuff?
No, not really. No, not really. When the officer took one, I sat down with them, the same.
What about Wally? He was another musician.
Yes, he was. First met Wally with a twinkle in his eye, which he always has, and he'd got his ukulele. We went on a route march, and he brought the ukulele, and we walked along 20-odd miles singing all these ukulele songs. And I like this, of course, being a musician, and we eventually got together, and we got a concert going. Formed on people that were in the lodge, living in the lodge, because there were other troops there, and they came over from Bullwell or wherever they were at to listen to the concert, and Wally was the star turn, being a comedian and banjo player and what have you. It all started from there.
You rated him as a banjo, as a ukulele player, did you?
Oh, he was a natural copy of George Formby. He could do George Formby songs and play the guitar just exactly the same as George Formby. And George Formby was at that time, of course, a star. Yes.
And so you'd play the piano, Wally would be on...
Yes, right.
Well, who else would be in the orchestra?
Oh, we got... I can't remember names now, but we had a guy playing drums. He brought his own drums, as I remember, and we started playing for dancing as well as best we could. We had a dance or two in the lodge and invited some girls up from down in Bestwood and Arnold and what have you, and made a bit of a dance there. I didn't know much about dancing in those days, I must admit. That came later.
So you were at Bestwood Lodge for quite a while then?
Yes, yes.
All this training business, right. Courses, this and that.
Right. And then we moved out. When we left Bestwood, we were formed as a battalion, and all these guys that had been on courses and things like that were interspersed into the battalion and so on.
And you were still a sergeant?
Full sergeant, full acting sergeant, which was another rate of pay. I got I got war substantive rank some time later.
So you're an acting sergeant. How did you get on with the other sergeants? Because would some of them be older than you?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was the youngest.
How did you get on with them?
Some of them I didn't like. I didn't like they were not the sort of thing that I'd hoped that sergeants would be.
In what way? What sort of...
Well, a lot of them were very ignorant, for one thing. Some of them couldn't read and write properly and couldn't spell and, so you could tell they were regular army and they were probably sergeants because they were experienced in the ways of the army, but they were teaching things that were different to what we had to endure when we actually got into battle. There's so many other things that they were teaching us, things that were based on the old Rudyard Kipling stuff, you know, from way back, Indian Army and all that sort of thing. There were one or two useful things that they could teach us, but they said that the main function of the regular army that joined the other army was to teach you how to flank, how to avoid doing things. And this, I'm afraid that this did happen.
When you actually went into the mess with them, a supposed equal of them, literally equal of them, how did you get on with them in there?
Oh, I got on all right with them. I had one or two people that I liked, and the others I could tolerate. I wasn't a quarrelsome person or anything of that sort, an amiable bloke anyway. And I think at that time I knew that I had the beating of most of them and they weren't going to bother me. Sergeant Majors and RSMs were a different matter.
What were they like?
I don't think they treated young upstart sergeants, 18-year-old sergeants, with any great form when they'd got a Palestine medal up or something like that. Or even in some cases, First World War medals. Although I think that by the time we'd got to Bestwood, the called SEAL. And he was an amiable sort of bloke, but he wasn't very able. He had a bit of a gut and he couldn't play football and he couldn't do this and he couldn't do that. So I didn't hold him in great respect because he couldn't do any of these things.
So the sergeant's mess was a mixture of people who would be permanently training the 70th and people like yourself who'd sort of been promoted rapidly and were due to go off.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
Do you know when you left Bestwood Lodge, I know you're not too sure on the date and we can look this up and put it in the record, but where did you go to?
We went round the area, round Brigg, Haxey, Scunthorpe, all around that area, dispersed all around that area. And from there...
Now, what were you doing there?
We were doing battalion training. There were battalion parades, there were platoon work, company work. Battalion had a football team, and we were able to do that sort of play football. And...